make us better.
And I woke up extremely pissed off, and right next to me in bed was a unicorn head Twix bar and a love letter from Killcar.
It was awkward, and I was scared for my life for a little bit.
Welcome to JoeCon, Bucky.
Find a problem, find a solution for the problem, move to the next problem. You just move through it, and it flows like water over rocks. You just keep pushing. Shut up, get over yourself, get back to work, you sissy. Start working, make it happen. Grab a cigar.
His Cobra Emperor just drove me insane.
There was a recent Leatherneck figure that just came out, and everybody was up in arms because it was so much taller than the rest of the figures.
Oh, yeah?
What you're saying, it sounds
accurate
to Ron.
That's true to Ron, yeah, yeah. Gary had brought me out of the shadows. Gary had made me realize that what I did was important. His loss was sudden, tragic, and it's unfair.
JoeCustoms.com is the home of the world's premier G.I. Joe customizing website. Its purpose, to learn, improve, share, entertain, and showcase the work of the customizing community wherever and whenever possible to whomever shows interest. And also to Cobra. Okay, we will help the community wherever there's customizing. That's what they say. Joe Customs is there. It hurts me to say this. Yo, Joe!
Oh, awesome.
Hi, I'm P-Lev, also known as John.
Hi, this is Dennis, also known as Dr. Benny. Greetings, customizers.
This is Joe Michael, 70.
This is Joe Zar, a.k.a. Mike. Greetings to everyone in customization land.
This is Matt.
This is Bucky.
I don't talk much.
I'd like to hear Jeff with how this was kind of a con that he was maybe dreading going to.
Yeah. Jeff?
So I wasn't looking forward to this con. And as a matter of fact, Dennis, the fact you were going was one of the deciding factors. That and the fact that Mike booked a couple months ago. And I felt obligated for those reasons to go. But with all that problems that led up until like the last couple of weeks, just to get going, I was ready to back out and didn't expect this was going to be much. And as a matter of fact, just kind of figured this was going to be my last one. And this probably wound up being one of my favorites, if not the best JoeCon I've ever been to.
Yeah, I kind of like to piggyback on what Jeff said. This con was very difficult for many reasons. One, the location. It seemed to be pretty inaccessible for people flying in because they had to either go to St. Louis or Chicago and then drive to Springfield. And then the continuing mess with the registration opening up less than 2 weeks before the show. I could see how people could get frustrated and start to question whether they want to attend this. I know I did, but as Jeff said, you know, things happened there that we didn't really expect, and it kind of redeemed the entire weekend.
I'll absolutely agree. I was definitely on the fence myself, but, you know, and the location was awful. The whole floor was a ghost town on Sunday because everybody had to, you know, drive somewhere to get their flights or leave early to get a connecting flight. There was nobody there on Sunday. And Mike and I had Slim Jims for dinner on Thursday because all the restaurants had closed by 10 p.m. in downtown Springfield, the capital of Illinois.
I went into this whole process myself, and for disclosure, I only went on Saturday, but I kind of went in with some of the same apprehension that you guys talked about, but almost more just from the club side of it. I've never been real big on the club figures, you know, to go and spend the cost of doing that and whatever else. I wanted to, I guess, for my first con, get my feet wet just with spending a day with general admission on the floor and all of that. And, you know, because of the way it went, you know, assuming that we have the normal crew of people there, I would definitely consider the full con experience next time just because of how much I enjoyed my one day there.
I just went because of both, and I wanted to see Jeff again.
Aww.
Who loves you, Bucky?
It always is. It's the people. It was so great being able to see Dennis again. I, you know, got to hang out with him a little bit in a similar choir. And this is really the first time I've met Aaron Bucky twice before, but it was the first time I felt like we really got to hang out, and that was great. So, and I met a lot of great people, saw a lot of people that I hadn't seen, you know, I see once a year. It's for the people. That's the only reason to go, I think, at this point.
And if I could chime in one more time, that's actually even what I'm talking about, why I would want to do the full con experience. I mean, of the things that I missed, by only being there Saturday. It's the hanging out. It's the socializing. It's the, you know, getting to see, you know, drunk Joe Michaels, those kind of things. But seriously, I'm kidding, but to be able to hang out and do that kind of fun and just, you know, just BS with you guys a lot more than what was allowed at the table. I still don't necessarily care about all the exclusives and the whatever from the club side of it, but I would bear with that to be able to get the full experience, I think.
Yeah, I know last year Kilcar was like McKay's attendant, and he had a blast. Just didn't get any toys out of it. Just loved being there and hanging out with everyone. So I do recommend it. If you've never been to the convention, you have to. If you're a Joe fan, you have to. It's a lot of fun.
We actually talked a little bit about doing that next year and just, you know, minimizing the amount of people who are actually going as whatever, you know, ridiculous name they have, a Real American Hero package purchasers, and just get as few people as possible to do those and just go as aides and just, you know, shave the cost down by a ton. It's like do it in a bag set and, you know, have somebody go as an aide and you save, like, you know, half what you normally spend, it seems.
I'm just saying.
And that's when I decided that probably next year I would not enjoy the full con experience.
Hey, out of all of us, how many people had naked guys kicking down their door?
Naked guy who humped the floor at the end of the hallway is what I heard.
I just unless you know something we don't.
Nothing.
Aaron, you walked into the tail end of the customizing class this year just to kind of get a feel from people. What was your take on it?
There weren't many people left at that point, and the people that were left were no longer, there was a couple people doing Robo Joe's, but everybody had kind of just started customizing a bunch of other stuff. There was a lot of other stuff going on there. And, you know, 3 to 4 people per table, all huddled in little groups, painting away, having a good time. I think I missed a big chunk of it because I did ask how many people came, and I can't remember the number the guy at the front gave me, but he said it was a decent turnout. I'm not sure. A bunch of people had the rake and spoon kits, and they were, that's what a lot of people were doing when I got in there, was picking up, like Astro Vipers and, Headhunters based off of his kits, which I don't know if those were available for that class or they just had me pick them up and come back in
there. I think people were picking them up in there. They were not, but that's cool. That's fun.
The other reasons that I was kind of hesitant to go this time was because of the lawsuit Gary Goggles had, and I knew that was going to, you know, cast a big shadow or a pall across the festivities, and it did. But it kind of waxed and waned depending on, you know, what time of day and what exactly was going on, and of course how much liquor everybody had. But on Friday, I went down to Starbucks before I went over to the convention hall. And as I was standing in line, this little boy ran in front of me. And I was like, God, I recognize that kid. And he ran up to this little girl. And I was like, I know both those kids. I know whose kids these are. And then I looked up, and there was Elizabeth standing in line in front of me. And I realized that no matter what kind of experience I was going to have that weekend, I was not going to have the same experience that she was having that weekend. And not to, you know, get all heavy about it or drag anybody down, it pretty much puddled me and kind of set the tone for me for the weekend about how important it was. And, you know, we got through Friday, you know, and there was a lot of work to be done. And I credit Mike and Matt for doing all the work.
Aaron helped out a ton with the table, by the way.
And Aaron. Actually, Aaron, I'm sorry for making you go thirsty all afternoon. Matt was supposed to take care of that.
It's all right. It's the first time I've heard of it.
Sorry, Matt. You were supposed to take Bucky some water or a soda. So did anything important happen before Friday morning?
We stood in line for way too long, and the club had to put their routers outside to get a Wi-Fi signal. Business as usual, pretty much.
Insert Matt standing in line.
How do you feel about this line?
It's standard BS.
How long have you been standing here?
What time is it even? I don't even know. 6:47. So, 1 hour and 15 minutes probably.
How far are you through the line?
I would say about 2/3.
And then Friday morning, dealer setup, preview. Did you guys enter anything in the contest?
Maybe. Why, yes.
What did you enter, Mike?
I entered two more custom Bullet Man figures, Batman and Santa Claus.
Both of which were awesome, by the way. Especially that, did you have that backdrop for Bat-Bullet planned? Or did you just kind of, like, throw that together at the last minute? Or was that all cut out ahead of time?
It was planned and thrown together at the last minute. It was just the way things worked out. I was looking for something, and I figured the Batman 66 end title credits would work as good as anything. So that's what I went with.
Well, it looked good for something that you were putting together in the hotel room. And then the glee with which you threw it in the garbage come Sunday was also enjoyable.
Well, the big thing about Friday was Declassified and Sam Damon Nomad. I don't know who initially set it up, but they had the goggles memorial at a local Irish pub. And by local, I mean, like, literally you walk around the corner and there it is across the street. And I'm not a good judge of crowds, but I'd say there's probably 200 people. Anybody else got an idea?
Over the course of the night, I'd say coming in and out. Yeah, at least.
And it was everybody. Everybody. I'm not saying if you weren't there, you weren't somebody, but I'm saying that if you were anybody in the hobby, all the way from Hasbro down to Joe Customs, and even just walk-ins, you were there. You came and you went and whatever else. And it was fantastic, and it was horrible all at the same time. I wish that anybody who had ever met Goggles in real life could have been there, because you would have felt the love. And I'm sure that Goggles felt the love wherever he's at. And I know for a fact that Elizabeth felt the love, and that's probably the most important, since, you know, that's probably the most important.
I was not alone in that sentiment. Taken from the last page of the Declassified book of this year, from Sam Nomad Damon and his eulogy that was reprinted, edited for the book, he puts in a paragraph that kind of is exactly what I was talking about, and what a lot of us, I guess, were thinking independently. And here's what he wrote. Quote, "I challenge every member of our hobby and community to pick up the gauntlet that Gary had thrown. I ask you to reevaluate your role, your very place in this community. What is it that you want out of your interaction with your fellow collectors? What can you do for them, and what can you do to better and expand our little corner of the world? I challenge you to leave this hobby a better place than you found it, to have an impact such that your absence would be so heartfelt. Make us better." End quote.
That's all I have to say about that.
I won't try and do it justice, and we got there partway through it, but Sam Damon gave a little speech to kick the evening off, and he ended it with something along the lines of, we're all here with friends, we all know people here. But that's not what Gary was about. He was about finding new people, reaching out, bridging the gaps in the online community, in the Joe collecting community, being that bridge between the different groups. And he said that we should all go out at the wake that night in the spirit of Gary and try and talk to people that we had never talked to, meet new people, you know, and be bridges ourselves. And I really can't think of anything more true to who Gary was to me.
So did you guys go out and meet people and talk to new people?
Yeah. Can I tell you something? While we're at the wake, we're kind of in the corner, and they had some posters of Gary that Brian from Assembly Required did. And I'm standing by Jeff, and over my shoulder I look, and there's Bill Merkline. And I let Jeff know that was Bill Merkline.
Bill was a former Hasbro sculptor, just in case you need to know. Anyway.
All right. So anyway, I let Jeff know that Bill Merkline's to my right. Jeff, by this time, had already had a few adult beverages, and his normally gregarious personality was amped up to about a 10 at this point. He turns around, sees Bill Merkline, and does this move that it was awesome. And with his left hand, he snatches the drink out of Bill Merkline's hand and at the same time inserts his hand to shake his hand, introduces himself, and then they talk for about 20 minutes. It was something I know I'll never forget.
I got a hug, too.
Yes. And that's how we met Bill Merkline.
I was in the middle of my 20-minute wait for service at that point, so I missed it. But I did ask Jeff to demonstrate his technique later on. And I got to say, being on the receiving end of that, I don't know how else you could react other than, and I mean, because he did it to me and I'm like, okay, my drink is gone. His hand is here now. I guess this is my new normal now.
Joe Michael 70, changing your paradigm.
I was really resisting the urge to say that's what anyway. She said.
Yeah, I was told that this was a different tone.
Like I know. I tried, but come on. Jeff practiced showed me his technique later.
Yeah. What I was going to say is if you could take like 5 or 6 different snippets from what Matt just said and save it for the next show's opening. He was on the receiving end. He demonstrated the technique.
Later that
night. He inserted his hand. Oh, my God. My head about exploded.
Fresh. So anyway, it was good and it was horrible. And I will say this, that pretty astounding that J-Man came up with those bandanas. And I think that everybody appreciated them. And there was a sea of goggles that night. And it was pretty amazing to be a part of that. It was really gratifying to see that. And J-Man won on you. Good for you.
Well,
that was a fantastic idea. And I know that there were donations involved. And if I'm not mistaken, I might be speaking out of turn. I think we got around $500 to go to the family. And John, you can cut that if you need to.
No, I was just about to chime in. By the time this gets edited and thrown up, Joe should have definitely made that announcement that we took in $400 worth of donations for the bandanas specifically. And then, Jeff, you said an additional $100 at the table.
I think just from the money that went into my hands and I put in the donation box, I think there was probably $100 at the con.
Cash donations, like people just wanting to chip in whatever they could.
Correct.
And considering the dealer sales floor pictures that we saw, that's saying something, you know, because that could have been something they spent at, you know, Roma Collectibles or Chris Neal's booth or something. So congrats to everybody that chipped in.
To be quite honest, we weren't advertising. It was either word of mouth or they already knew.
Yeah.
We didn't have one out with a sign. People came to us. People knew about it beforehand or learned about it from others. And again, it's a small gesture and we all do what we can. It was awesome to see. And I hope J-Man can take take a bow for that.
Yeah. That was all him. That was all him.
So let's move on. Let's go to Saturday. Hey, anybody text me this year about somebody waiting at the booth?
I did, or if it was Mike.
I did.
Oh, yeah? Who was waiting for me?
Which time?
Exactly.
Yeah, Jeff's day started about 11:30 on Saturday and Sunday.
Central time?
Yes.
Which is weird, because I went to bed at Eastern time.
Well, I pointed out because I arrived sometime around 12:30 Eastern time and thinking that, hey, you know, I'm going to get to see Matt, and I'm going to get to see Michael, and I'm going to get to see Bucky, and hey, where's Jeff, everybody?
Where was he?
I believe he was sleeping from a, what would be the right term, a bender?
I don't know, man.
That's probably not fair.
A mind bender?
It was like a 3:30 a.m. podcast interview is what it was.
Well, it was worth it from what I gather. But okay, so who was waiting for you? I texted you once because Bill Merkline came by and said, hey, you know, first he thought I was you, and I'm like, no.
You could never be that short and sexy.
Well, that's what I was thinking. And I said, no. And, but he wanted to follow up on something you guys have been talking about. And then, I remember sending you a text, about 40 minutes after that when you still hadn't shown up yet. And, I said, hey, Jeff, Morgan Lofting is inexplicably here at the table asking for you.
2 years in a row.
Again.
Emphasis on inexplicably, but hey.
Is that when you got the special recording for Billy?
Well, that was last year. This year, I decided to get a special recording for everyone. I told her that all my nerd friends were jealous. Insert here.
All right, go for it.
All right. Oh, ah.
You say it for us.
Go carcass me off.
That cracked me up. Michael woke you up with a boot to the bed?
Well, I'd been upset, quotation marks, that no one had been waking me up and that I felt like I was missing all the stuff in the morning.
So, yeah, that's the price to pay for getting all the stuff at night.
Stuff.
That's a prayer now.
All of a sudden, my bed was kicked so hard I thought I chipped too, and I woke up extremely pissed off, and right next to me in bed was a unicorn head Twix bar and a love letter from Kilcar. I'll make sure to post photos.
Wow.
I will say that the hearts were my idea, but I thought them apropos.
You guys ever get to the point in your life when you realize that underwear is just not a good rag to have around? Maybe it's just me.
It was fun, guys. I'm going to see you later. And
please remove all your customs from the gallery.
All right, hold on. Here's the Baroness.
Take me to bed, darling, or lose me forever.
God, I'm so... Why don't I just shut up more?
You don't know on those things, you know. Sometimes you got to prompt people, and then you're like, oh, yeah, good job. You did good. You don't just want to be, all right, now everybody be silent for 2 minutes before and after. We'll be like...
Which would have been really creepy wearing the horse head mask surrounding her.
Especially when I count down in 3, 2... Good point.
Oh, tears. Actual tears.
Hey, Bucky. Yep. What was the most important part about me and you hanging out on Saturday?
I don't know. When you were trying to kick my door in?
I know the answer to this one.
Are we going to keep going back to that?
Well, it was awkward and... I was scared for my life for a little bit.
Welcome to JoeCon, Bucky.
I figured the answer was the one that made Jeff come all back to the table all weepy-eyed and everything.
The conversation with Diorama Dreams, that was pretty darn interesting. Jeff warned me. He went over there and talked to the guy beforehand, and I don't know if you were planning on getting in a conversation with him at that point, because I know you hadn't recorded it. And then you asked me to come over and record it because you didn't think you could do it again. And I didn't want to go up and be like, hey, my friend just told me this cool story about you. Will you repeat it? So Jeff went with me and we recorded it. And I'm like, well, I can listen to the story. I won't. It's not going to phase me. I'll just blank it out. And I did for the most part, but it was a really touching. And I don't want to sound like all romantic or anything, but it was a really touching, inspirational story. It really was. And I was even like, I was looking away because the talking to that guy and looking him in the eyes and listening to what he had to say was amazing what he went through and where he's at now and how he has to go about doing what he does and how it ends up looking like it does based on he had to change everything about what he did and how he did it. And his work is still jaw-dropping amazing.
I want to say one more thing. Specifically in Rhode Island, the club has never known what to do with the Joe Customs table because we don't sell. We follow the declassified model at the convention where we just show and we talk about and we encourage and try to get others involved. But because we don't actually sell anything, the club never really knew what to do with us. So they kind of always threw us in the back corner. And in Rhode Island, we were set up next to Dio Dreams Incorporated, which I suppose they also didn't know what to do with, because all he was doing was showing his dioramas, and they were fantastic. And in Rhode Island, I spent some time just talking to the guy because, you know, in my mind, that's what I'm interested in, and I think, you know, it's what he does. I want to learn how he does what he does and why he did what he did and everything like that. And so I kind of, you know, had a little rapport with him, and then all of a sudden he kind of dropped off. Anyway, once you play it, I think it'll all make sense as to why he dropped off and what he's had to do. And this year was the first time he's been back. But it was pretty phenomenal, and it definitely was. It was moving. Play the interview.
All right, this is Joe Michaels from the convention floor with Bucky and Patrick Kelly from Diorama Dreams. By the way, motorcycle racer, motorcycle rider,
How you doing?
Wheels, man, wheels.
Nice to meet you.
Pleasure.
I was just wondering if you could tell Bucky what you told me about your little convention experience and where you've been the last couple of years.
Which convention experience?
Well,
this one, or
well, we our booths were together, like in Atlanta, maybe Rhode Island, one of those conventions.
Rhode Island,
you were
maybe,
set up,
yeah.
And then noticed you haven't been around the last couple of years.
Well, when I wasn't building the commercial sets, I was racing mountain bikes downhill. So sort of offsets, you're asking me a place to put out. And when you wreck, it's a pretty nasty yard sale. And I had a couple of really nasty accidents, and I broke my neck and damaged the movement centers in my brain. And it sort of scrubbed everything we knew, and we had to start from scratch. So we started working with Legos for about 8 months to reconstitute my finger and hand dexterity and hand-eye coordination and program planning, and we had to work through the medicines that they gave us for the seizures for 3 years or so, and then we started to wean them off because the fog was so bad I wasn't creating, I wasn't building, I wasn't riding, I couldn't do any of that stuff. So we figured it was all done and good, and that was over. That was that part of my life, and now it was time for something different. About 2 years ago, we started doing water therapy, and that coupled with the retraining of all the different things, a week or so of foam training, a week or so of grass training, a week or so of paint technique training, and just sort of reskilling myself at all of these things I used to do. And that and the water therapy, and then my wife started to help me learn how to ride a bike again. You know, we get a little kid's BMX, and she'd run around in the driveway with her hand on my shoulder, keep him from falling over, and we built it back up. And things started to move in the right direction. As it improved, it was like, well, you know, we were looking at alternative career paths since I couldn't do this stuff. Nothing was working. Nothing set. The doc said the information's all still there, just we had to reconstitute the pathways like we did with my physical controls for the information that was up there. And I lost about 15 years of who I was, of memory, of just all that stuff disappeared. So we've also been re-educating me of my portfolio, of all the things that I'd built that I didn't remember. And it just sort of kept going and going. And I started with the little bike as a test to see just something small, and the bike went well. So then I built a little dial for the bike, and that went well, and we were coming to the show. It seemed like sort of if you've gone through high school again or college or whatever, your thesis would be this weekend. So I gave myself a traditional production window of about 3.5 weeks to do a commercial piece and set about throwing down and see how far can I get and if we can make it. And if we fell out at week one or week two or week three, we weren't doing it on anybody else's dime. But if we made it, then we could show and we'd have something fresh and we could prove to people we were capable of producing creative works again. And head for the show, and we made it. We got the piece done. I was talking with my wife earlier that my processes are very different now. At least they seem to be for me. I don't really remember so much, but I had to become very methodical about my movements, my choices for movements, because the signals from the brain would randomly come, and I'd flail. My arms would just throw a glass across the room. So it made working with a knife or a pencil or any of that stuff a real hazard. So I had to learn how to be very considerate about each move I made so that I could keep the clearest signal to that movement and not have extra ones jump in and mess with stuff. And in the process of learning all this stuff again, I have a great deal more of a methodical approach to building things on a timeline as opposed to, it's still freeform, but it's more calculated. That makes sense. So I'm actually more proficient and efficient now than I was before. And it just worked. It just flowed. It's smooth. And all of the things that I seem to know seem to be natural. So I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but I know what my next move needs to be. So I just, what's the problem? This would work. I'll go find this tool. What do you know? I've got this tool. How awesome is that? And it just sort of goes. You just push this, find a problem, find a solution for the problem, move to the next problem. You just move through it, and it flows like water over rocks. You just keep pushing and keep having, man, and it feeds itself. And it's so nice to be around my hardware again. Because for the first year and a half, I didn't even go out into the shop. I couldn't relate to the tools. I didn't recognize the tools. I didn't recognize ever having used the tools. I wasn't familiar in the space, which was really a conflict because I lived in that space 15 hours a day for 30 years. So we cleared the shop. We got rid of all the supplies. We put cars back in the garage, and I quit. I didn't watch movies. I didn't listen to music. I didn't go out. We got blackouts on the curtains. You know, you just said I had to start over. But so it's like coming home. It's like a fish getting back in the water to be around all of it. And I'm in heaven. It's bliss, man. It's bliss. And to see it come out and to see it work and to see people respond to it, I have purpose again. In that void, there was I didn't know what I was supposed to do. What am I doing? What do I do next? You spent your whole life building this career dream and working for it. Now you're kind of just... I guess you're gonna have to give me some more questions because I'm.
That's freaking inspiring.
I'm gonna get brain dead here in a second.
All right, here's a question. How's the response been to the work in progress, the shuttle?
People really seem to be enjoying being able to see how things happen in the process instead of it just being finished. You can't really tell what took place or what went into it. People have no idea that was polycarbonate and styrene to that level. They may speculate, but they've really liked it. That was the first time we tried bringing something out like that, and I may do that again in the future. That went really well, and it was nice not to force myself to shorten the build in order to finish it, because now I can give another 2 weeks to it and can make it really what it wants to be and not just what it had to be to get to a show. It's equal. People have been equally excited about the set. You know, the big kick is watching the little kids get giddy and watching the adults become little kids again. And everybody wants to go home and make stuff, go home and build stuff. You know, and you're inspiring people, you're encouraging people to go and empower themselves to do things, and it just sort of blossoms. It what is that? Propagates like a wave, but it feeds back to you. You came up with some really nice things to say to me, dude. They're going to fuel me for a long time. And that was really, really generous of you all to be so complimentary and welcoming. And when it's a long day and I'm not feeling all that great, I'll think about the fact that it make people happy, and then I'll be like, oh, yeah, shut up, get over yourself, get back to work, you sissy, start working, make it happen. Grab a cigar.
Sweet.
Thank you.
Hey, man. Are you kidding
Thank
me?
You so much.
You guys are a privilege to talk to. Thanks so much.
And now we got to get pictures.
We got to get some photos.
What else do we have for Saturday? What else happened Saturday?
That was the awards.
Oh, yeah. The awards dinner. How did that go?
Yeah.
Was that the quiet guy?
Yeah. There was the... Yeah, you were down there for the trivia game, weren't you, Henry?
If that's what you want to call it, I guess, yeah. I sat down there, and I was kind of wondering what was going on, and I got a trivia game, and then it crashed, and then it came back up, and then it slowed down, and then I was like, this is stupid, so I left. So did a lot of other people.
Not me. When I saw everybody leaving, I was like, hey, this looks like the place to go. Not even lying. Totally chatted up the bartenders. It was awesome.
We got that wonderful speech from the mayor of Springfield. It was not... overlong at all. Very succinct.
He invited us back, which is the only person really there who did.
Yeah, he wanted to thank us for pumping almost $300 into the local economy.
All from me. All beer.
$304 counting those Slim Jims I heard you guys had for dinner.
Right.
Oh, you brought those with us.
Oh, did you buy a bag of pretzels in Springfield that I still haven't opened in case I couldn't get food the other 4 nights we were there?
I still haven't looked at my con figures. All right. Then it was probably Saturday.
All right. So at some point you recorded with a bunch of Joe nerds. Is there any lead-in you want to give to that?
In essence, I asked Nop Picard, Patrick Stewart, and Darren Howlett, a couple of old-school Joe Customs guys, what they thought about Joe Customs, both historically and currently. And what they had to say was very gratifying and made me realize that what we do is still important even now. Or, you know, at least important to a bunch of nerds.
So this is Joe Michael standing in the lobby with a bunch of Joe nerds who have something to say. Dear Not Picard,
Hey, I'm not Picard. That's me. We were just talking about handles.
Do you ever go to Joe Customs anymore?
I go there daily. I go to the forums every single day, and I always check out two things. I check out the Joe section to see, you know, if there's any news or cool things that are being posted. And I check out the off-topic section because I've gotten so accustomed to the guys there that I kind of have a feel for, you know, what they're into and what they like. And I just find it interesting. And, you know, it's just like talking to a bunch of buddies.
Yeah. Hey, Dream. You ever go to Joe Customs anymore?
Joe Customs.
Hey, Darren Hallett. Do you ever go to Joe Customs anymore?
Okay, so since we're doing this confessional, this all started. You actually pulled out your phone when I confessed to you that for the last 5 years, I still go to Joe Customs almost every day. I've lurked there for 5 years because I still, it's my home. It's what got me into the internet at large, the forum at large, the G.I. Joe community at large, and I still have this soft spot for it. And just like Pat, every day I check out three forums. I check out G.I. Joe, Off Topic, and Custom, General Customizing. Every day that I'm there, which is a couple times a week.
I love you guys.
You guys are awesome.
So, being where you guys have been from the beginning and knowing everything that it is ever to know about G.I. Joe, welcome to 3D printing. How is that going to affect customizing, in your opinion?
I don't know. I mean, I really haven't given it much thought other than the fact that, I mean, because we have to still create, like, those parts libraries for them, right? But I'm assuming that it's going to give us an insane amount of freedom. You know, there's going to be, literally, you think of it, it's going to be creatable. There is going to have to be some other form of learning, though. I mean, I think everybody's really tactile. Now you're going to have to sort of, those tactile people that have that creativity are going to have to learn a lot more about computer language and interaction with computer software into how to translate that image in your head into a physical piece.
I think it's another new tool, just like many things. I think that we have gotten ourselves to a point, even without it, that there's some great things that can be done. But I think that there are there's been difficulties with creation of new parts. You know, one of the things that we've been able to do is take things and adapt them, which is, you know, the heart of customizing. That's why we call it customizing. But I think that there can be a lot more scratch-built things. And I'm wondering if it will go where everyone else has kind of anticipated it, where I could create something that's essentially a custom and allow you to print it out, you know, 1,000 miles away.
Right.
I mean, there's still going to have to be some assembly there, though. So I kind of question. I don't think the artistry is going to go away, which is what I think that some people are afraid of. They're afraid that there's going to be a day where you could just click a button and have any figure. I don't think that's going to happen.
One of the things that you missed that I had said earlier, or one of us said earlier, was that early on in the internet, you know, you could go on to the places where G.I. Joe is being talked about, and, you know, talk about what toys are coming out next, or who you think should be in the G.I. Joe movie if they ever make a live-action movie out of G.I. Joe, you know, that same old topic. If you wanted to actually expand your horizons and, you know, enhance your own skill set, the place where you went was Joe Customs, because you learned something new, and it allowed you to really think about what was important in G.I. Joe. And I think that the stuff coming from Boss Fight is definitely, you know, horizon expanding. It's stuff that it's another tool in your toolbox. Those figures are made so that you can do a lot of things.
Right.
And honestly, I think that a lot of times when you're on Joe Customs, you're looking at situations where the Joes were easy to take apart, you know, for the O-ring figures, and people were making their own stuff out of them anyway. You know, it was your own universe of G.I. Joe, whatever that may have been. And really, if you want to take it back to the origin of G.I. Joe in 1964, where it was nondescript to the universe, it's still very G.I. Joe oriented to be able to just take that base body and create anything in your imagination. And I think that's where the Hax line is going to be a gigantic tool in our pocket, as has the Marauder stuff. And, you know, if you have all that, you've got G.I. Joe.
Fucking fantastic. Fucking fantastic.
I can't recall with the table
was it, I think it was, I know it was me and Dennis, and were you there, Aaron or Mike? I can't remember, but the whole Tim Finn, Bill Berkline thing?
Yes. And I did send P-Love pictures of Bill Berkline with the Tim Finn and also a close-up of the sculpture so, you know, people can see the detail he's putting in it.
Yeah.
And I know Dennis had a recording, but that we would want to ask Tim if he's okay with us using that.
I sent it to John, so, yeah, it's up to you.
But I think that would probably fit.
You really have to either shave off your beard, as you thought you were going to do, or I have to sculpt the beard. Okay? So here's your IMO camera.
Oh,
dear. This is a converted and resculpted Recondo. Okay? I did give you a weapon,
no problem.
But it's filled with blanks because I'm a passenger, so
don't
you know by
now. Don't have that one shampoo,
please. And I didn't get a chance to do
that. Jamie Bolak.
No, I gave him IMO, a Bellenhow IMO.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
As close as I can get to it. But I have a reason. So your name in my world is Tailfin. T-A-L-E. You are historian and intelligence. You have dossiers on every Cobra person ever and every G.I. Joe. And you know from past experience what Cobras are likely to do. You work with an IMO camera for two reasons. One is that a digital camera can be disrupted where the film can't be. And also the film camera carries no batteries. It is a wind-up.
Right.
It's a spring-loaded wind-up. Okay, that's why you use an IMO. Or you can take it as it is and paint it and do whatever you want. And you can walk away with it today.
This is lovely, and I'm so happy to see it in process. I would be so thrilled to give it back to you.
Okay.
So
yeah, I do need to do some more work on the boots and clean it up here. Of course you can. Don't be silly.
Here's one of my other favorite parts from Saturday night at the dinner. So, you know, we were handing out our handbook, our customizing manual that we started this year and wound up being, from what I can take away, a pretty resounding success. And we can all talk about that a little bit more later. But one of the more gratifying parts was Kurt Bozigian was very interested in our setup and in those pages. And he came by on Saturday early to get a whole set. And we, even though we hadn't set them all out yet, all the guys wanted to accommodate him because, you know, it's Kirk. And so all of my friends want to be whores. And so they got all the papers, but they missed one package. They missed the painting part two. And so I realized that later, and we were at the dinner, and I was talking to Ace, all good, that everybody knows Ace. Anyway, and I said, hey, do you know where Kirk is sitting? Because I have to tell him something. He was like, yeah, Kirk's right up there. So I went over, and Kirk was sitting at the table, of course, with the other voice guests and special guests. But between Kirk and Morgan Lofting was an empty chair, so I just kind of dipped in. I didn't sit down, which, you know, I know it surprises most of you. And I said, hey, Kirk, you know, I know you liked our handbook, and that's really awesome. But you missed a page. So either we swing by tomorrow and get the last page, or I can bring it by when you're doing your signing or whatever. And Morgan looked over and said, oh, you know what these guys do? These guys take toys and they break them all apart and they make new toys. And Kirk was like, oh, I know what they do. And he went into a story about how in the latter days of his run, Hasbro was, you know, giving them some kind of budget, I don't know, limit, I guess would be a good way of saying it. And so they had to, you know, quite literally just customize with the parts that they had, the tools and whatnot. He said it was really awesome to see how, you know, all this customizing comes back around later. And then he proceeds to pull out this Steeler custom out of his front pocket that he'd been carrying around and show it to me and the Baroness and describe, you know, this part and that part and the camouflage and the goggles and all this other stuff and the types of paint he was using. And it was awesome. It was a really fantastic moment. And I just kind of stood back and thought, my work here is done. Then I went back to the table, and then I won that prize, and then I just left.
You forgot the part where you dropped the mic. Back to the customizing guide.
We printed out 200 color copies to be able to hand out to attendees. Does anybody know the count that we have left after the days that it sat out there for distribution?
Probably have about a quarter of the pages left, maybe a third. There were seven pages total.
And that's just fantastic. The interest that was shown in the one day that I attended was fantastic. You know, there were some people, you know, it's, there's so much going on when you're on the sales floor, so much to be distracted by, and especially when you show up at the Joe Customs table, when you have all the figures out there, the vehicles and the customs and the tools and you know, J-Man's printed stuff and all of that, that a lot of people might skip past the printed material. So I found myself, you know, steering some of the people who would come up to the table towards them. Other people were just coming up like, hey, I need to have the manual. Like, you know, they'd heard about it or seen somebody else grabbed it and they were coming over for theirs, dang it. And, you know, just showing a different level of interest that way. A handful of people that I interacted with, just, it was a very rewarding thing for me because they'd come up either with a question about customizing or they'd see a specific figure and make some kind of reference to, man, I wish I could do that. And it was just like this, you know, perfect, segue into, well, you know, take a look over here because this is, you know, your gateway drug on the customizing. And the reaction from a handful of people really was phenomenal. It was, oh my God, I was, you know, I've been trying to figure out how to crack a torso, or, you know, I've tried three or four customs and they've all sucked. And, you know, and I get to chime in, hey, all of us, you know, our first one sucked. But this is something that'll steer you the right way. So the success that I saw from it firsthand, just for one day, was great. And, you know, just knowing that that many of them got picked up, I think is a really rewarding number. So,
Matt, pop in right here and just say one more thing. You know, Matt, Mike, and I have stood behind that table so much that we just kind of are Joe Customs face at these things. I spent not one, not two, but three nights with Brian Mulholland at one point or another, just brawling the living out of stuff. The sculpt actually apparently is a Hasbro employee that was sitting across the cubicle from the guy who actually sculpted it. And the only thing Brian Mulholland has anything to do with Brawler is the name. Just like Surefire and David Lane. That's the only connection. That's how Hasbro recognized them for all their efforts. They named these figures after them.
You know, that's a good segue into something else that happened at the convention. And I know this is more at the news, and maybe we'll cover that some other time. But specifically, what'd you guys think of the tribute figure that Goggles is getting?
Sightline?
Yes.
That was a cool moment, I guess. That was, the way that they explained it is that with the priest that was talking in that moment, they had to jump through a little bit of hoops and actually go to legal and say, hey, no, we're gonna do this. We want to use this guy's name, and they got, the family's permission and everything, but they have a policy where they're not allowed to name those kind of characters after real people anymore. Like, they went through some hoops and they got it approved, and it's happening, and it's great. It was a touching moment. There were a lot of people that got quiet and applauded. Everybody liked it. I love the fact that they were able to do that was pretty neat.
Yeah, that was like the one, I didn't end up actually going to any panels this year, because I figured, you know, it's going to be all over the news sites, you know, this, that, and the other thing. I don't need to be at the panel. And that, I really do regret not going to the Hasbro panel just for that moment. I think it's an awesome tribute. I'm glad they were able to make it work. It's just really cool that Hasbro recognized the impact that he had as well.
I wanted to say something, and I don't know where the best part to say this is. You know, you go online on Facebook, and everybody who went to the convention is all doing their big wrap-ups and saying all the things that they liked and all the people they got to meet and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I kind of went to this convention, and I looked around, and I was like, which one of these guys is the new Goggles? Which one of these guys is going to connect up and down the ladder? And, you know, and there's a few people there that, you know, you rub the wrong way, or I felt like maybe they were auditioning to be the next Goggles or something like that. But in the end, I realized that there isn't a next Goggles. And this convention really proved it to me that when Gary passed, everybody recognized the Gogglesness of him. I don't know, the magic, the power. A little bit of that, I think, dissipated and was absorbed by everyone who knew him. You know, in one of the quiet moments driving home, it kind of dawned on me that there is never going to be another Goggles, but that all of us actually are Goggles now, and that it's our responsibility, our requirement to keep, you know, moving it forward, paying it forward. If it's going to happen, it's on us. I've been reading all these dedications and all of these things online about people coming home and everything they want to wrap up. And I think, actually, Justin, General Hawk, said it best, and if you guys don't mind, I'd just like to quote it right off of his Facebook post. And here's what he said. You did it, Gary. You brought all of your different crowds and different friends together into one place, and we all rocked it. It was nice to remember, and as far as I'm concerned, you were right there with us. I think that we're all goggles now. And see.
I do want to say, in addition to how well received the guide was, and I'm really looking forward to hearing everybody's opinions on that, what we did right, what we can better, what they'd like to see in the future. I'm really anxious to get that feedback. But above and beyond how well that was received and how well that came out, I really want to thank everybody who came and brought stuff to show on the table, because that's what draws the people in. So, you know, Jeff and Mike and Aaron, Dennis are all right here on the podcast. They were all there. Thank you so much for bringing stuff to show. I know both Oreo Builder and Dusty79 had sent stuff to Aaron to have on the table. Thanks to both of you. Dusty, your Simpsons were very well received. John, P-Love, your Mindbenders were also a draw all weekend long. Thank you to everybody who contributed, because without those customs on the table, we can't do our job. We can't spread our love of this hobby. So thank you.
Well said, yo.
Yeah.
Why don't you give everybody their parting shots right now and then run the interview and then just let the interview end and call it the podcast. Hey, thanks everybody. I know it was tough tonight with the technical stuff and it was very emotional and I wanted to get through tonight without bawling on you guys. I guess maybe it took a week to get to that point, but thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for the wrap up. Thanks for the coverage. I always appreciate it. And thanks for spreading the customizing to everybody that goes to these things.
I guess I'll just say thanks again to everybody who brought customs. Thanks to everybody who stopped by the table, you know, and talked to us and had a kind word to say about who we are and what we do. I don't know if any of you will hear this, but it's appreciated.
I'll chime in with thanks to you guys for all being a bunch of cool dudes that made it worth driving 5 hours each way on one of my few chances to get a break from the kids. Very much worth it. Would do it again. We would like to do it more thoroughly next time. For me, it was like I said, the first trip, so I was taking in a lot of the sights and, you know, just getting to see the boss fight stuff firsthand, getting to do whatever. But at the end of the day, it was hanging out with you guys and all the other members of Joe Customs who came and hung out and chatted with us. That's what made it worth it for me and what will always make it worth it. So thank you guys for your presence there, for being the cool guys that you are, for being ambassadors for the site. And I say that not in the least bit, ironically. Seriously, just thank you guys for being who you are and doing it how you do it.
All right, I'll go ahead and jump in now. This, my first convention I went to was in Norfolk in 2002, and I didn't know a single person there. And I pretty much spent the entire time just walking through the floor, looking at stuff and not really interacting with a lot of people. This last one was the 9th convention I've done, and I think it's the 4th one in a row that Jeff, Matt, and I have drove to. It was the shortest one we've drove to. We've gone 14 hours. This was about 6 hours. I can't think of two better guys to be in that bronze bomber hitting the highways going to and from Joe conventions. One of my favorite parts of it is just sitting there talking G.I. Joe as we go to and from. Thank you for making that ride as pleasant as possible. You know, thanks, Jeff, for coming in and spooning with me at 3 o'clock in the morning. I appreciate that, too. And for me, this convention has really changed. It's now for the people. Just meeting and interacting with people and talking with people, it's why I go. It's not the toys anymore. It's for the people. And I want to thank everyone for showing up, visiting with us at the Joe Customs table, taking the customizing field manual, looking at the customs, talking about it. It's one of the highlights of my year, and I really appreciate it. So thank you to everyone.
Yeah, thanks for showing up to the table, everybody. And I hope you like the manual that was made and the other three guys that were at the table all weekend long. Thanks for doing what you do. It's great to stop by and talk with people about customs in person and not just on a forum. It's actually quite interesting to sit there and talk shop and get to know these guys better than what you do online. And it's always good to see Bindi I've only met him twice, and both times very briefly, but we, we're both bald, so we got something going there.
Go Red Lasers.
Yep, go, yep. And if you haven't been to a convention and you don't know what to expect, and you are a member of the forum, come to one, hang out, meet people. I was kind of in the same story that Mike just told. I've been to a couple of them, and usually I just wander the sales floor. It's a lot more interesting to stop by and get to know the people behind the website and meet them instead of just wandering the sales floor, because they're all really nice guys.
Honestly, did all the thank yous get recorded or not?
I don't believe the second round you started.
Yeah, the second round.
Well, I was just going to say a big shout-out and a thank you to Jeremy, Silent Master. Man, he cheerleaded the site and everyone on the site all weekend long. He grabbed sound bites. He had ideas. He went places we couldn't go because we were tied to the table. He got a lot of the voice actor work stuff. It was great. Other than that, I just put it out to the same guys I would every time. You know, the Declassified guys, Nova, Kevin Watts, Kukusan, Kobe, the guys from AR, Ryan and Steve. Man, I don't know. I'm not going to drop down the list. I'll just say that a lot of those guys, even though they weren't there for Joe Customs, they really helped Joe Customs and our table succeed, I guess, at this convention. That's all. Oh, thanks to Troy, Dream. He was cheerleading, too. Also, hi, Dream's parents. It was nice to meet you.
Matt, I thought you...
Not quite done. Hi, Enos. Where's my camera?
What's on yet? What about Eamon?
I thought it was Elman.
It is Elman.
I thought it was, yeah, Elman. Or as I like to call him, MT.
Now that Jeff reminded me, yes. Thank you to all the great Joe Customs guys who came by the booth. Rune Typhoon, Crankcase, Mark M. Is there anybody I'm forgetting?
Mysterious Stranger.
Mysterious Stranger.
Gold Bug. Yeah.
Chaos X, Chris Haskins stopped by. That's the first time I've met him. I think that might be his first con, too. He was the guy we talked to in the bar as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, thanks to all of you guys for coming to the show and for coming by the table, introducing yourselves, getting involved with the picture and the blind pole. It's great, I mean, get to know you guys for, you know, the brief periods that we can squeeze in during the con.
There's obviously some guys that we're missing, and I don't want you to feel bad, but I didn't write you down, and I don't have the poster you signed in front of me to read all of these off. I will try to do it next time or the other podcast.
I guess a thanks is in order for Diana for driving Morgan Lofton from the airport to the show because of the weather. So thanks.
I was really fortunate to get an interview with Bill Marikline. And I'm going to say his last name wrong every time. I think I say it wrong several times in the interview. It was an awesome experience, and it wouldn't have happened without, you know, quite a few people. So I'm just going to kind of run down the list here. First off, Gary Head was the one who initially reached out to Bill and put Declassified in contact with him. So that's one more thing that we all owe Gary. After that, Sam Damon, the founder and president of Joe Declassified, Jared Bunnell, and Ben Conway as big factors in bringing Bill to Springfield for Gary's wake and also to allow him to experience his first JoeCon. And then Jeff for making the introduction and getting the ball rolling. Bill came by the table asking for Jeff specifically, and we just worked with it from there. So thanks to all of those people.
I didn't realize this was Bill's first convention.
Bill didn't realize that there was conventions.
First and probably only. He doesn't even have a computer.
But Matt has his telephone number.
Wow.
But yes, it was an amazing experience, and I really hope you enjoy the interview.
This is Matt, a.k.a. Hypno Hustler, and I'm here with Bill Merklin, and we're just going to record a little bit for the Joe Customs podcast. I'll let you introduce yourself, Bill, if you tell us a little bit about you and what you do, and in case people don't know why, if they're Joe fans, they should care.
Well, that's a very loaded question, Matt. Thank you. This is Bill Merklin. I'm a commercial sculptor, and I had worked with Hasbro in the 1980s up until the beginning of the 1990s on the G.I. Joe line. As I remember, the amount of work that I did, I think I was responsible for between 60 and 70 G.I. Joes. of the material that I have left, because much of it was tossed years ago before I realized that anyone had any interest in it, we could account for 52 of the pieces that I did. So I know for sure we did 52, but I'm pretty sure that we did more than that. We, in this term, is the royal we, meaning me. Okay?
All right. Well, we just have a few questions. We know you've had a long day here at the con. It takes a toll on everybody, so I won't keep
not on me. I had my batteries recharged by this show. It's phenomenal.
Oh, good. So we'll focus on some stuff that's a little more in line with the customizing mindset.
Wonderful.
When you did a sculpt, about how long did it generally take you to complete one, start to finish?
Well, it really depended upon how much detail was in the piece, but I can tell you that at the very beginning, the first piece I made was called Ricondo, and I was given 5 weeks to sculpt Ricondo. I did the job in about a week and a half, 2 weeks at the very tops, and that made me a star with the project director. Project directors always have to deal with deadlines that get very short with sculptors, because if something goes wrong and you have the wrong guy, you have to have enough time to find the right guy to do it or to make revisions. So absolutely, that's always a consideration. So the materials that I worked with, which were not traditional materials, I worked with a two-part epoxy called plumber's seal. It is actually used to fix leaking pipes, but it's a wonderful sculpting medium. And because of that, I could work very, very quickly. And this made me valuable to my art directors, because reliability and speed meant that they could fill out their needs more quickly. And I think that's more than anything else was why I got more assignments than perhaps other sculptors did. We had a wonderful team of sculptors. I mean by that I could tell from the work that was produced that they were all first rate. So I don't think it was merely because they liked my work. I think it had to do with reliability and the time issue.
Absolutely. Now, I heard that you sculpted the original, the Visa hologram.
Yes, I didn't design it, but I did sculpt the original bird.
And that was one-to-one?
Yes, but I should tell you how difficult that was, in the sense of the company had the technology for a year and a half. The company was American Banknote. They were the largest printer of foreign currencies in the world. They had a printing plant in the Bronx, and I lived in Queens. That's all part of New York City. And for a year and a half, they would try different artists, and each person failed. And as they failed, they would ask, who would you recommend? And the last guy who failed recommended me. And the first job I got, they wouldn't tell me what it was. They wouldn't tell me what it was for. It was the seal of the government of Haiti, which was something sculpted on the size of a dime that included all this kind of heraldry, such as cannons and muskets and shakos and helmets and drums and palm trees and flags. And then, to make matters worse, they said, well, now we also need you to paint it in grays, black and whites. And I said, what is this used for? And they said, we can't tell you. And I did a number of jobs like that for them until about the end of 83 into 84. My art director, Steve Kravitsky, who is still a very good friend, although long time gone from American Banknote, had told me that there was going to be a major article in the National Geographic, and that they were using an eagle. I had sculpted for them for their report, for their annual report. That was the only thing they had that wasn't owned by another corporation. And this is when I was doing the Visa card, and this is when they laid it out and explained what this was all about, which I thought was bloody about time. And the Visa card that you look at, the original dove, the first dove, was 3/4 inch in wingspan, at least from the longest point to point. The Japanese wanted something a little bit smaller. The Japanese always want something smaller. And we made a second dove in that was 1/2. And that remained the same, because in the technology of holography, unlike photography, there was no way to reduce the object. And so that's why sculptor after sculptor failed, because they didn't have the ability to be incredibly small sculptors. And It has been observed that at 6'2", I seem to be a very strange person to be sculpting very tiny things. But somehow I worked this out in the course of time.
So if our listeners were to pull out their Visa cards, would it be the same one today?
It would be exactly the same bird, but I think the one that I last saw has been reduced. So after 10 years, they developed a technology where they were able to reduce. And they did. The first hologram that I saw was Magic Johnson, and he had been reduced. But there were three National Geographic covers. I was the only one that used an actual piece of artwork that was designed for this purpose. And the other two were objects that were turned into holographic images. But it was a wonderful time for all of us because we were learning new things. And one of the things we learned, this may or may not be of interest to your listeners.
This is fascinating. So,
well, when the eagle was done originally for the banknote, they wanted to be daring. They wanted to see what would happen if we painted it in natural colors. And so it was brown and white. It was a bald eagle. And the talons and the beak were yellow. When they put this into the holographic room, the room was sealed off for half an hour before imaging process began, because any vibrations in the air might affect the piece. Now, this they told me a little bit later, and I'll tell you the consequences of that. But what they discovered was that when they imaged the color version, the yellow disappeared. And they called me up and they said, "What yellow did you use? Because we want to paint the room that color. If it's invisible, if it's invisible to our rays, you know, it's perfect for us." But the issue of movement, I asked them one day, I said, what are you using to support the sculptures for holograms? And they said, "Piano wire." I said, "You mean the wire that is designed to vibrate?" And I said, "You know, you idiots should use armature wire, which is aluminum and lead, because it will not move. It will absorb energy." And they did, and they thanked me because it did make life easier for them. So you guys at American Banknote, now U.S. Banknote, ha, ha, ha.
So you've sculpted some things at amazingly small sizes.
Yes.
Do you have any tips for anybody trying to sculpt? Because we do a lot of detail stuff. You know, I run into issues where I'm working on one side of something, I go to the other side, and I completely destroy what else I've worked on.
I
try and do it in quadrants. So any tips for small-scale sculpting?
Well, every material that you use has a limit. It has its pluses and its minuses. And there are some materials that will work very easily, but they will leave you with soft edges. The principal material that I was sculpting in, which was not, by the way, the Visa Dove. The Visa Dove was done in sheet styrene plastic.
Oh, wow.
And it was done in one afternoon. It was done in several hours. But I would say that the two-part epoxy that I use, the brand I use is called Plumber's Seal, but there are other brands of two-part epoxies. And Plumber's Seal was designed to fix leaking pipes, but I sculpt with it. When that hardens to such a point that in sculpting it, shaving it with an X-Acto knife or other tools, you can bring it to a very sharp edge. But then if you're working in waxes, waxes can do the opposite, and that is that where you need a surface that is soft in the sense that, like the pocket in the corner of the eye, when you're trying to sculpt that, that will always be rough and a hard material. But with waxes, you can soften that to the point to get exactly the right shape. But on the other hand, when you need a sharp edge on the waxes, they don't work. And in some cases, what I would do would take the wax to its limit and then transfer it by use of a rubber mold, an RTV, room temperature vulcanization silicone, and then cast it in a urethane plastic and then edge that and continue in another material to get deeper into the sculpting and solve the problems. Sculpting is problem solving, just like real life.
Yes.
Just like real life. But that's it. Different materials and try everything.
And you prefer, it sounds like you prefer subtractive rather than additive sculpting.
Well, I'm very odd. I wouldn't say that I'm odd. Let me put it to you this way. people who use polymer clays like Sculpey or Super Sculpey or any of those plastics, they generally sculpt the figure to completion and then they bake it. And now, my method of, if I'm doing a human figure, one that has to be draped with clothing, I will always make it as a rough nude. A rough nude so that when I apply the material that is going to represent clothing, then I can judge by the gravity of what would happen to the clothing more accurately to the figure that's underneath it. So I use a process of additive and then deductive and then additive. So among my tools that are used, I will be sculpting with watercolor brushes when the material is very soft, and when it gets very hard, I'll be using tungsten carbide hand engines, drill bits, carving bits, and hand engines that are used in the dental industry. Okay.
Wow. So,
well, thank you. Wow is definitely it.
I'm using stuff files and X-Acto knives, stuff I bought at the craft store.
If you come to my home and my studio, I'll show you all the tools and all the materials that I use. I'd be happy to share that with you.
Oh, that would be amazing. I know you were showing us a sculpt you were working on of Tim Finn earlier.
Yes, yes.
And I know
Tim just saw it a few moments ago.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, he was so excited. and I know with a lot of the early G.I. Joe heads, they were done at a 2-up
yes.
scale. Do you have a preference? Do you prefer to sculpt larger?
Oh yeah. No, it's silly. I when asked to do this, the very first toy line that I worked on, which was not produced, was done 1-to-1, and that was for the movie Crawl. And that we were making the toys that they were making as they were making the movie. And then Warner Brothers decided the movie wasn't going to sell, so the toy line was dropped and wound up in the hands of Hasbro. And that's when they called me. I could have made all the G.I. Joes exactly the scale, as I did with Tim Finn's conversion, but they preferred the 2-ups, and so we did what the client wants. The client is the king. And as ridiculous, as silly, as foolish, and as in poor taste, it's my job to serve the needs of my client.
Absolutely.
And some clients have made me look very bad. But again, other clients have made me look very good. So it's all in the client.
Are there any particular G.I. Joe sculpts that you remember as being a real challenge, something that you really, that you had to start, like scrap and start over, or that you just really had to, struggle with?
No, there were some that were aesthetically horrible to me.
Okay.
The ones that are memorable, the early ones, like Recondo was great fun. And then also when we got into sculpting real people from the company, that was fun. Although the photo reference was very limited, the Royal We, still talking about me, folks, did the best we could. But then I had the opportunity when sculpting Larry Hama to go to his office, meet him, and take all the pictures that I would need. And when Tim Finn came to me some months ago to interview me, I said, let me do this for you. And I took about 8 photographs going around his head, and that was my reference. I would tell you that if you're going to sculpt a portrait, the best way to start is with a profile image. And I'll give you a tip, because I know you're all dying to know how to do this.
Yes. Okay. Actually.
Let's say, Matt, do you want to do a portrait of yourself? Have somebody take a profile photograph of you. Then what you do is you print that photograph at a Staples or Office Max, wherever you can, reduce it to scale. Reduce it to the size that you're going to sculpt in. Now, take the Xerox copy of your photograph and rubber cement it to a piece of sheet styrene plastic. And then cut it out, scribe it with an X-Acto knife to trim out a template for your profile. Block in 1/2 of the head and then turn it around, peel off the template, and do the other half. Because believe it or not, the greatest recognizable resemblance of a person starts with their profile. Everything is in the right place. The eyes are on the right line, the nose is on the right line, the mouth, the chin. But more importantly, the thing you don't realize is the volume of the skull and the hair and all that stuff. So this is how I do all of my portrait figures, is by trying to find the best reference. And when I'm doing an actor, for example, mm-hmm. and I will go and use my TV set. And when I did Sylvester Stallone, I was using VHS. And now it's phenomenal to be able to take photographs off of flat screen TVs and digital. Yes. Much, much better makes the job much, much easier. And I would do that also in sculpting horses or sculpting anything else. There's a film in my collection, a Chinese film called House of Flying Daggers. I bought that from my collection for roughly about 3 seconds of the movie, which shows a horse tumbling. And as you know, I also sculpt horses. And the horse tumbling, the Chinese don't care about whether the horse lives or dies. And our movies, horses have been protected since 1939 after the disaster of making the Charge of Light Brigade. So our horses in movies will always fall the same way, which is very unrealistic but very safe for the horse. So I search for things that are going to help me to understand what I have to do as a sculptor and make it better.
Well, that... The profile sculpting thing, that's revelatory, honestly.
Anybody can do that. And that's why I'm giving it to you on the podcast, because I want you all to sculpt.
I can't wait to see what people do with that. I know you really enjoyed Recondo. Was there anything else that really stood out to you as something that you got this project from Hasbro and you're like, man, I can't wait to do this?
Well, despite the fact that Ron Rudette was a very good friend that I knew from my other hobby of military miniatures and the shows that we went to together, his Cobra Emperor just drove me insane. Okay, and it drove me insane because really I hated his design. I really thought it was over the top. Incredibly evil. Not evil in the context of being the head of the Cobras.
Evil towards the sculptor.
But me,
yes.
To me, with having to sculpt all those scales. And Ron, I have your phone number, and you should be able to find mine. And I'm putting this out to you because I feel we should be talking. And if this pisses you off, just call me.
Was there anything that you really hoped you could do that never... Came down the pike?
Oh, yeah. I would have loved to have done more female figures and redesigned the bucks, the engineering parts that we had to sculpt on top of. And I really regretted the fact that we were always working with the bucks that were made for male figures. And I thought the women...
I guess I kind of knew that, but never had it spelled out. So it was the same buck for both the male and female figures.
Yeah, but from an artistic point of view, the anatomy between the male and the female is... much more than most people think of. And to make a proper female figure would require a different buck. I also would have liked to have seen some alterations in bucks so we would have had different heights to characters, just like real life.
Yes, you know? Absolutely.
And this is another riff on Ron Rudette. But when we sculpted Ron Rudette as Leatherneck, Ron is bigger than I am. I'm huge. He's bigger, okay? And Ron is, I'm guessing, about 6'3". I'm 6'2". And he had, at that time, at least 100 pounds more on me. And what we did for him was better than Jack LaLanne could have ever done for him, you know? And so he owes me big time.
I find this hilarious, too, because there was a recent Leatherneck figure that just came out, and everybody was up in arms because it was so much taller than the rest of the figures.
Oh, yeah?
What you're saying, it sounds
like that's true to Ron.
Accurate to Ron.
That's true to Ron, yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. So, looking at some of the new stuff that's coming out and the stuff that was revealed today, how do you think the current product compares to what the stuff you worked on?
Well, one of the things about computer technology, and that's what we're dealing with now, and it's true also in concept drawings, is that they are all looking homogenous. They're all looking the same. In other words, there's a limit to the programs, there's a limit to what they do. And when you look at the G.I. Joes of my period, you can see stylistic differences, which is to say you could see the hand of different artists. And the other thing is that, which is crucial and not dealt with in 3D printing, is that the human face and the human body is not symmetrical. And yet the figures are symmetrical. And so therefore, I feel when I look at them, but I have an eye for this, I feel that they don't have a personality. Where when I look at the old toys, I feel that they have character, that they have personality, because they came from human hands and human thinking. Now, the world is not going to come back to us. This is the world we're going to be living in, and that's what we're going to get used to. But the programs can be improved upon. And the programs, if the programming is done by a sculptor who knows how to program, I would say you're going to get a much, much better result. Now, I don't know if kids see this, but I do think kids feel it. They can feel the difference between a toy that they connect with and a toy that they can't connect with. And for me, for example, one of the regrets was Jinx, because Jinx was a wonderful female character, but they hid her face. And I thought that was a disastrous thing to do, because you don't want to hide a personality, because children relate to the figures as real people. So when you hide a real person, you're not really helping them out.
Wow. That's wow.
Okay, is that a lot for you?
That's super insightful. No, that's awesome. It's stuff that I hadn't really considered. And you know, I've talked with some of the current sculptors and seen some of their work, and I know there's a blend between actual sculpting and computer. But I do agree that there is less of that, the personality coming through. There's less of the art.
Well, that's the homogeny of the technology, because the technology can only give you what is programmed into it, where the artist, it's not just the experience, but there's also the thing that comes about, which is an act of spontaneity when an accident works in your favor. We call that serendipity. And if you are a good artist, you recognize a good accident that works in your favor and you leave it alone. And
I think all of our listeners have probably experienced some of that.
Oh, I would hope so, especially you guys who do the conversions, because you have to be creative.
Absolutely.
But I'll tell you, a few months ago, it was brought to my attention, a friend had made a copy off of the internet of a guy who imitated my demonstration as a computer, a model. And I want you to go online and see this, because it is called ZBrush Rush, A New Approach.
Okay.
I don't know who did this, but I loved it. I thought it was an incredible compliment. He did give me credit. He did say, this is the guy who sculpted all the G.I. Joes. He gives my name up front. I didn't hear it on my copy, but I was told that's there. And all I can say to the guy is thank you. And I asked the people, please put a link to his line also. So if you can't find it, it is called ZBrush Rush, A New Approach. And if any of you know who did this, please tell him, I love it. Get my phone number, call me. I want to point out a few things that might be helpful to him, but I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, yeah, we'll definitely track that down and put a link to it with the podcast when we post it up.
Thank you, Matt.
Absolutely. That's all I had for you question-wise. Is there anything else you'd like to say to our listeners? Or
This is my very first convention.
You've been an amazing guest, by the way. I can tell you're having fun. You're approachable.
I love this.
You have a lot of knowledge to share, and you've been very good about sharing it. It's very much appreciated.
Well, I've been doing this for a very long time, speaking to groups, and regretted that we didn't have a chance to do a panel. But for the people who came to me, I had a ball. I love you all. You've expressed how much my work meant to you, and boy, I've done a lot of things in my life that I'm very proud of, but I can't be any prouder than I am now, seeing you all grown up and knowing that you did not become monsters. And as I like to tell you, when you guys were kids, I felt I had to apologize to your parents, and now I have to apologize to your wives. Let me tell you, they are the real heroes here, okay? That they can put up with this is beyond my realization. I'm also here because of Gary Head. Gary Head brought me out of the shadows. Gary Head made me realize that what I did was important. His loss was sudden, tragic, and it's unfair. It was just unfair. I've met Liz, and I met the kids. I love them all. I love Gary for what he did. I am now 69 years old. But as you can tell, I have the spirit and the mentality of a 14-year-old. And I can tell you that Gary was like a son I never had. And he was also like a father, because he was very paternalistic and very protective of me and really watched out for me. So, Gary, wherever you are, a million thanks. A million thanks.
There's really nothing I can add to that. Thank you so much, Mr. McClure.
It's Bill.
Bill.
Thank you, Matt.